Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I am here today with Spencer Oberg. And normally, Spencer, I have a whole thing written out. I don't for you because I just had to vote, but I'll just say a few things. One, we met through different individuals that I have interviewed from my podcast, Ping and Corey. And then you and I have commonality, and I'll let you talk about it, but you are co-founder, I think it is, of Unincarcerated Productions. And so I'm anxious to hear about that. You and I have a passion around those who have been incarcerated. And I imagine those specifically who've been in prison, but even for those who are, quote unquote, incarcerated, but live outside the walls of a prison. So thank you and welcome for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jeff. And you're right. We definitely have some common interests around what I call the unincarcerated population.
Tell me where you're located right now. And then I'd love to get a background of you. You know, where you grew up, where'd you go to school, and a little bit about your career as well.
Sure. Well, I'm in Bellevue, Washington right now, which is where our offices are. Got a few different companies out of these offices. We can dive into that in a little bit. And my background is kind of eclectic. I was born in Puyallup, Washington, which, you know,
I know Puyallup.
You know a true Seattleite if they can actually pronounce Puyallup when they read it, right? Everybody else looks at it and they're like, what is that word? And then I was raised in a little town called Graham. I was actually just out there visiting my folks the other day. It's since grown up a lot from when I was growing up there. But when I was there, it was, let's just say it was kind of the sticks, and it was not the best environment to be in because it was the meth capital of the country at one point. I went to private school until like third grade, and then transitioned to public school in the Pierce County area. And it didn't take me too long before I started gravitating towards, you know, the older, quote unquote, cool kids. And all those guys were either doing drugs or selling drugs or something like that. So by the time I was getting into high school, I was dabbling on the side with marijuana, selling weed on the side. But I was also continuing to, you know, my feet on both sides of the fence, if you will. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was getting good grades. I had a job after school working on dirt bikes. I was a total gearhead as a kid. So I was a tech hand at a little motocross shop starting at like 13, 14 years old. But I was, you know, I was smoking weed and hustling on the side. That path continued for the next quite a few years. I ultimately ended up dropping out of high school and getting my GED because I was just fed up with the drama. And my life path took me to New York, upstate New York, to a treatment center in upstate New York as part of a court order. And at the same time, he started taking college classes and then got sick of taking college classes and went back to the workforce and then ended up getting into some more trouble with the law and having to do, it was just a little bit under a year in prison. And that little experience kind of scared straight is definitely not the right term. It was a little dose of reality that, you know, I probably want to get better at what I'm doing here, right? I got to clean up my act enough so that I don't wind up back here. But it wasn't enough of a reality check for me to really fundamentally change that the part of my character that was, you know, still dabbling on both sides of the
fence. And how old were you at this point?
That was 18.
Okay.
Just barely 18 years old. I got quite a few charges, actually. I was with some of the people that I was messing around with on the wrong side of the fence with the drugs were messing around with forgeries and, you know, check fraud and that kind of crap. And I got quite a few charges. And I think the prosecutor kind of took a little bit of pity on me and gave me a good deal, or at least it seemed like it at the time. So I only ended up doing about 12 months actually in prison. And And that's inclusive of good time and everything. So it was just really kind of an in and out trip as far as that goes between county jail and then that little stint in prison. And when I got out, I focused a lot more on the right side of the fence. I went back to college for a while and then had an opportunity to go run and then ultimately have the opportunity to become a partner in a pretty successful automotive shop in Issaquah, which isn't too far from where I am now. And I did that for a while, but then I got injured and actually my now former wife had a brain surgery. So we both got put on pain meds, and they were very, very liberal with how much they were prescribing both of us. And, you know, the hustler side of me saw an opportunity that apparently I didn't take the time to think better of taking advantage of. And it snowballed, and over a year and a half period of time, it went from maybe selling a few of them here and there to at least what was alleged in the charging documents, you know, a full scale prescription forgery ring. And I will neither confirm nor deny that, but let's just say I was doing way too much and justifying it to myself because, you know, I wasn't really, it was a quote unquote victimless crime. I wasn't hurting anybody. These were, of course, this is not how I think now, but the only thing that I was taking advantage of were huge multinational corporations that had plenty to give or whatever. Then I was only hurting myself, if anything, you know, with the drugs. And, you know, of course, when everything came crashing down and I was facing a much longer than 10-year prison sentence, but ultimately took a plea deal for a 10-year prison sentence, cleaned up myself, it became very painfully clear to me that not only was I hurting other people, for sure, I was enabling people to become addicted to opiates and do all kinds of other stuff that goes along with it, which is certainly no way to add value to anybody's life. But I was heading full speed down a path that was either going to get me killed. I had been robbed and shot at point blank. I'd been in car accidents. I mean, by the grace of God, do I stand here and talk to you today? And I was either going to die or I was going to do life in prison, either as a result of some crazy accident that some, you know, God forbid somebody really got hurt in, or life on the installment plan. And, you know, at that point I decided, and it was, you know, looking back on it, it's much more of a clear, like I can articulate what happened then. I don't think it was such a clear light bulb moment decision, but it was the spark of change. And that moment of recognition, like something's got to change here. I really determined that whatever time I did end up doing in prison, I was going to make the most out of it. I was going to finish my college degree. And I, you know, come hell or high water, I was going to turn it into a positive in my life.
So Spencer, can I stop you for 1 second? Because I've been into a number of prisons in a number of states, and I've talked to a number of guys like you at the time. Not all of them do what you did. I mean, you made some mental decision as a catalyst for change. I mean, why in my dealings and or visits and stuff, what you do find is that these guys, and I guess ladies too, but I typically deal with guys, it usually takes, I don't know, 1, 2, or 3, or 4 times. And eventually, usually there's a surrender of some sort. But in your case, what was a catalyst for changing? Because you sure didn't have to.
No, I didn't. And to be fair, I mean, I think for me, my encounters with the justice system started relatively young. 15, I think, is the first time that I went to juvie. I didn't do a long time in there at all. But, you know, I had probably a good 3 encounters. And by encounters, I mean some sort of being in jail.
Yep.
But before I got down on the path of the Oxycontin and the pain pills. So, you know, I'd kind of been, like I'd mentioned, on both sides of the fence, I'd experienced, I think, enough of the results of what that kind of life was going to continue to get me, that when I got deep into into the oxys and that whole racket and period in my life, and then came to the point of being faced with all that time, it really hit me that this is, you know, I want more than this. I want to be more than this. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is I'm chasing in drugs and fast money is not filling that void inside of me that I think if we really sit back and admit it to ourselves that we all have, mm-hmm. you know, that, and what I've since come to understand is that void is adding value to people's lives. It's having an impact. It's, you know, it's really in everything that I do, it's making it an addition or a multiplication equation versus a subtraction or a division. And I think it was just that realization that it's not going to get any better than this. It's only going to keep getting worse. And I want more. And, you know, not only do I want more for myself, but I want to, you know, I want more for my family and for the people that are impacted by me. I want people to talk about me like I'm, you know, that the black sheep of the family, the one that they avoid during dinner parties. You know, I want my life to have a positive impact at those kind of gatherings because people are talking about the good things I'm doing.
All right. So now, because I don't want this to be a focus on just your past, and I don't care if that comes back up, but you get released. And if there's more you want to talk about that, that's fine. But I also want to know, all right, so you're a changed guy today. And so what are you doing? What's your career today? Get us a little up to speed. And if you feel like you want to fill in that gap, that's fine too. But I just don't want it all to be about that because I don't want people. I don't mind talking about it, but you're so much more than that. And that's just part of your past and it's only a part. So I just don't want that to be because I could ask 100 questions on it, but it is what it is. And you've progressed. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what are you doing? What when you got released, what were you doing? And then what are you doing today?
While I was in there, it was my focus was on building a foundation for when I ultimately got out, however far in the future that seemed, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, what time period we look at during my journey through that system. And I think I did a pretty good job at doing that. When I was going to work release, my now business partner at Good Planet Foods, which is a plant-based cheese company that's exploding. And we could get into the details behind that, but definitely an up-and-coming force to be reckoned with in the plant-based cheese space.
That's cool.
So David was just leaving his last company, Pop Gourmet, transitioning out of that and looking to do something new, and invited me to come and join the team and see if something blossomed out of that. And it certainly did. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Neither one of us knew the magnitude of what we were getting into, but David he's got a good sense for opportunity. Some people say he's got the Midas touch. He was presented the plant-based cheese idea and category by his sister-in-law. And after we dove into it and he said, you know what, there's definitely an opportunity here and we're going to pursue it. We did. We dove in head first, most definitely, and have been grinding out building Good Planet Foods ever since. And now we are, gosh, I think we just hired our 19th, wow. 19th or 20th employee. And, you know, we raised $12 million just last May. We're being courted by all kinds of different venture capital and, you know, institutional investors and also strategics that are looking to get in on what we've got going on, which is a really good feeling. So a lot of what I've been focusing on in the day-to-day has been building the operations side of Good Planet Foods. But I've also been, since 2018 is, I believe, when I formed Unincarcerated Productions, I've also been really trying to recreate the light bulb moment that I saw happen with a lot of people who came in as guests to a program that actually David and I collaborated on inside, which was entrepreneurship, basically an entrepreneurship program. We were doing all kinds of art type education inside there, but there wasn't anything that could help somebody really hone that entrepreneurial muscle. And that's something that I was really hungry for. So we created it and we brought in people who were leaders in the business world and leaders in the community. And a lot of times people like that who hadn't experienced those of us who were incarcerated were moved to the point of tears when their preconceived notions of who we are were shattered. And really the whole mission of Unincarcerated is to recreate that experience and to bring that to people who never get the opportunity to go into prison and experience it firsthand through various forms of media. Our podcast, which is Unincarcerated the Podcast. You can find that at unincarceratedthepodcast.com, little plug. And through other media, like long form stuff like Netflix, full length documentaries, dramas, etc. And really so not just recreate that experience, but shift the paradigm of society on the whole so that people have the opportunities that I had when they get out, right? I mean, I'm so freaking fortunate that it really blows my mind. You know, I've got a new house that my fiance and I are remodeling. We've got a couple of fantastic business partners. Vic Chopra is also one of my partners in Unincarcerated. I met him while I was in work release. I met David while I was inside prison. He did time too. You know, my life is amazing right now. And it's only up from here. And I want other people who have been where I've been to have that opportunity. And that's what I'm really passionate about. And that's what Unincarcerated is all about.
Obviously, for those of my listeners, they will know why you are on, because obviously I have that same passion. And it's interesting. And I don't talk about this a lot because we don't really talk about investment opportunities on here. But I've planted the seed, and I've talked to you about it, having a fund that individuals can invest in, either formerly incarcerated men and women who are entrepreneurs or businesses that hire formerly incarcerated men or women. And it's interesting because not only do we need to change the heart and minds of men and women who are in prison, but the piece that we often forget is we got to change the hearts and minds of those who aren't in prison, because it's what you're trying to recreate. You know, as a guy who went into prison and experienced it firsthand, like, I have a different view of you and anybody else. You're just like anybody else. It's just that you happened to get caught. I didn't. Or my sins are actually applauded. I mean, I've been a workaholic. I get rewarded for that. If I was an alcoholic, you'd have problems. But a workaholic actually gets paid for it. And so to me, the way you actually break this cycle is it's not just focusing on, quote unquote, the inmate. It's also focusing on those of us who are outside these walls. And ironically, I talk to as many people who are, quote unquote, in prison outside of the walls. As you know, you talked to a lot of these guys in prison. They have freedom. They have more freedom than I have at times, you know, when I'm out in this wall. So anyway, sorry to preach, but I love what you're doing with Unincarcerated Productions, and I'm anxious to see that thing flourish.
Well, I appreciate that. And I mean, all I can say is amen to everything you just said there, because I know it's true for me, right? I found freedom in prison. And something that you mentioned a little while ago is so true. Not everybody does.
Yeah.
Another piece of what we're working on in Unincarcerated Productions is addressing that part of the equation too, because you're totally right, man. It's a two-part equation, right?
Yeah.
There's the people on the outside who need to be able to experience people like me, like my business partners and close friends, and recognize that not everyone is that monster that they see on the evening news who gets out of prison and does something horrific.
Yep.
And the people who are inside who haven't had that change of heart and made up their mind to be a better version of themselves, they need the opportunity to have that reckoning. And I think, unfortunately, in a lot of our prison systems across the country, those opportunities are pretty few and far between. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we could talk, you know, it's funny.
We could get on a soapbox, I think.
Yeah. Well, I would say this, as much as I believe that there needs to be reform, and I absolutely think there does need to be reform in the criminal justice system, I also am not this guy on the other side saying everybody in prison you know, they're just a victim and they didn't do it. And it's like, no,
yeah.
I mean, you've seen it. They've done it. I mean, you just admitted stuff you've done. And the irony is that you ultimately had to make a decision yourself to change. Now you had to have people around you to get there, but you know, this fad of the prison system is all horrible. And look, nobody, it's not great, but there are certain people who, unfortunately, that's how they get freedom. They wake up. And so anyways, I won't go down any more down that path.
We're on the same page, man. All good.
Yep. Okay. So look, you're doing some pretty incredible stuff. I mean, your story, what took you, you know, what I guess you went to the precipice and you woke up and you made changes and you're doing some amazing things and have an amazing future. If you were to step back, how would you best describe yourself today in the context of where you are in this journey of life?
You know, that's a tough one because I feel, especially when I'm talking to guys who are still in or who are coming out, you know, right behind me, it's easy for them to perceive me as this guy who's got it all figured out, mm-hmm. who's got it all going on, mm-hmm. you know, like, yeah, I came, I saw, I conquered and we're on to the next thing, but it's not like that. Right. Mm-hmm. There are still struggles that I go through on a regular basis. And I think one that I'm finally coming to terms with at this stage in my life's journey is self-acceptance and really getting to the point of not just accepting who I am and where I've been, even though I've been beating that drum for quite a while, which it was a conscious decision I made before I gave a TEDx talk while I was still in prison, because I knew, you know, anybody was going to be able to see my story. Am I going to out myself like that? Or do I want to get out and be able to hide the fact that I'm a felon? And I made the conscious decision that I really want to embrace who I am and where I've been and use it for good. And I think I'm finally getting to the point where I really, in the fiber of my being, believe that. And it's opening up the door even wider for me to lean in to doing work that is really meaningful and impactful and work that I feel like it is my purpose to be doing. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love what we've done at Good Planet. I love what we continue to do at Good Planet. I'm lactose intolerant and I love cheese. So the stuff that we make is a godsend for me and for so many other people. And there's, you know, I get a lot of joy out of what we're building here. And I know there's a whole nother realm that I'm right at the precipice, to use your word, of stepping into with Unincarcerated and the work that I'm really leaning into there, that's just gonna, what I've done so far since I've been out will pale in comparison. And it's exciting and it's scary as hell all at the same time.
Well, that's honesty. And I appreciate that. So I think you actually just went to where I want to go. So how do you want to change the world? And I know that's a big concept. And so maybe it isn't change the world literally, but what is your next calling? What do you feel called to do? And yes, it's probably Unincarcerated, I'm guessing. But I mean, behind that, why are you doing that? If that's your answer.
Yeah. And I think it comes back to this idea of giving people the opportunities that I've been given to really become unincarcerated. And I mean, we define unincarcerated as liberated from bondage of any kind. You mentioned earlier something that is so true. There are people that we probably work with or you know, pass on the freeways every single day who are more imprisoned mm-hmm. than most of the people that I mm-hmm. that I associated with while I was inside.
Yep.
And what I'm really passionate about leaning into is empowering people to find that, whatever that is for themselves, to find mm-hmm. find the state of unincarceration for themselves. And because of my past and where I've, you know, the journey I've walked so far through life, I feel like the specific demographic of of human beings, of individuals that are the first focus of that are people in prison and people coming out of prison. The 70 million or so of us, as they say, that have felony convictions or, and have experienced the justice system that are in our country right now. And I want to, you know, I want to take my successes. I want to take my failures. And I want to bring all of that into making a difference in other people's lives that are have either gone before me, I guess, really, because there's a ton of people out in society who have been to prison or doing amazing things and also who are really down on their luck or right back in the muck. And those who are coming behind me, coming out of prison, right? I want to make a difference in their lives and do it by telling powerful stories, but not just telling, you know, writing books or making screenplays or making movies, but really creating an industry around it and leveraging the power of enterprise to take these stories to the entire country and the entire world while creating real meaningful, tangible opportunities for these men and women coming out to engage in things that can give them success if they really lean into it and pursue the process that's part of the opportunities that are put in front of them. So I don't know, man. I feel like I got a little esoteric there, but
Well, it wasn't esoteric to me. I understand where you're coming from. I love how you refer to unincarcerated. It's just not just about people who've been in prison. You know, the difference is you put on your resume, what felon or whatever it was. I mean, I don't put in on my resume that at 40, I blew up because I was a workaholic. But the truth is there's very similar dynamics going on there. And actually, I wish more of us, you're forced to talk about your weakness or your, I'm not forced to talk about mine. But the truth is we all could benefit if even guys like me, who in theory don't need to talk about it, we need to talk about it. We need to share it. We all hit breaking points. We all have limitations. And that's one of the things I always say is if I had grown up around some of the situations of guys that I've talked to in prison, I'd probably be in the same spot. I mean, it doesn't excuse the behavior, but it makes you sure understand that we're not as different as one might think. You used the word enterprise. So let me run with that for a second. When did you realize the power of capital?
It's been an evolution and something that I've been, I think, learning and that's slowly become more a part of my consciousness for quite a few years. It's something that I learned in theory when I was studying business and entrepreneurship in college, which also happened to be in prison. But I really started to understand its power in practice with Good Planet Foods. Mm-hmm. And then when I started Unincarcerated, it really hit home that capital is the driving force behind creating opportunity and behind continuing to keep that opportunity going and have it multiply. And it's the reason why Unincarcerated is a for-profit corporation and not a nonprofit. Because I firmly believe that creating a business model that not only has a positive social impact, but also generates revenue to continue to reinvest in the business and create more opportunity for the people that it's trying to serve has a lot more legs and longevity by and large than something that relies on, and although I'm a huge fan of philanthropy, don't get me wrong, but then by and large, especially in the prison space, I've come into contact with so many nonprofits and that their work is I feel often thwarted by a lack of capital, a lack of resources. So when I started Unincarcerated, I didn't have very much capital or resources, and it's still very much bootstrapped, became painfully obvious to me that in order to grow this thing, in order to scale it, I'm going to need capital, period. Whether that comes from, well, there's a few different forms of capital, right? I mean, you've got your social capital and actually you're talking about here, money and the sweat, right? Your that you put into it, sweat equity. And since I've been able to put in more capital to unincarcerated, the growth has accelerated exponentially. And then I think what really, really solidified my own realization of how important capital is to do something big and meaningful is with Good Planet. And when we completed our Series A and then started to round out our executive team, which is pretty well rounded out now. We've got some amazing people, and just the scale at which we're able to execute now, and you know how much more momentum we're able to gain in a fraction of the time is, I mean, it's painfully obvious to me that if you want to be successful and create an enterprise that has a lot of impact in whatever industry you're in, it takes capital to do that. And the beautiful thing is you get a return on that capital for investing in creating those opportunities.
From a world's perspective, the narrative that one would tell you is you're a formerly incarcerated guy. You can't get a job, and there's no way you're going to go attract a bunch of capital. And here you and your buddies who fit that mold are out there and have done it and are doing it.
Yep.
And that just goes against the narrative today. And by the way, that's not to say that what you're doing, everybody can do, because not everybody has those skill sets, and not everybody should be an entrepreneur, and not everybody in a prison system should be an entrepreneur. But regardless, you found the courage, and I'm sure that there's people around you, and you guys are getting it done. It's dang impressive.
Thanks, man.
As an entrepreneur myself, I went from being an executive to an entrepreneur. There's a massive difference. And I will tell you, you know, anybody who looks at an entrepreneur and says, oh, they're just greedy and you know, they just make a bunch of money. You're like, oh, my gosh, the risk that one takes, you're pouring your heart and soul into this thing, trying to not only make money, but trying to help people out. And so I just have a much better appreciation as an entrepreneur like yourself. So now the opposite, I don't know if it's the opposite, but let's just say it's the other side of the coin. So you have access to capital, thankfully, because you got a great idea. You've got great partners. How then do you view this idea of stewardship, and whether it's stewardship of capital or stewardship of ideas or whatever, just stewardship? How do you think about that?
For me, it's really simple. It's taking care of other people's assets, other people's things, the same way that I would take care of my own and then some. And for me, that's saying something, because I am a very, very meticulous particular is the word that a lot of people use, person. I mean, we can just use an example of our house or our car, right? Stewardship to me is, if you're renting a place, you're taking care of it as though you own it. I would take care of somebody else's house even better than how I take care of my own. And my own is freaking immaculate. Like, mm-hmm. I'm very particular. And I'm really, I don't know, passionate's not the right word that I'm looking for. I feel extremely strongly about being thoughtful and responsible about how I manage my own resources, my own assets, and how I take care of my own possessions. And really, I mean, that can also be extended to relationships and, you know, with not only with others, but with self, but we don't need to go that far. it's really as simple as, if somebody entrusts me with something, I'm going to make sure that I apply not only my own standards to how I'm going to manage it or take care of it, but even level up those standards, because it's an honor and a privilege and a huge responsibility to be entrusted with taking care of something that's not your own. So there's no other way, in my opinion, to look at it. And I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I heard on, gosh, who was it? I think it was actually Jeff Bezos who said something like, one of his friends at some point had a rental house, and the renters, instead of getting a Christmas tree stand, they just screwed the Christmas tree right into the hardwood floor.
Oh my gosh.
And And that to me, of course, that's the absolute antithesis of stewardship.
Yeah.
And I can't, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that some people don't have the same view on what it means to be a good steward. But I mean, to me, that's what it comes down to, man. Do unto others.
If you could make one dream come true for your life, what would it be?
I think big. So that's a tough question. There are a lot. There are a lot of dreams.
Yep.
With the path that I'm really leaning into and moving even faster down every day, I think if I can measurably have a positive impact in shifting our society in America's collective consciousness towards the formerly incarcerated and incarcerated, and measurably create more opportunities for people to come out and become the people that they have, they certainly have the potential to be, and have the desire to be, then, you know, that would definitely be a, that would be a feather in the cap. But I was thinking a little bit deeper on this, and really, this might sound kind of cliche, but I think like the ultimate dream for me is to get to the end of the journey, or, you know, at least the end of this stage of the journey, depending on what you believe, and, you know, be able to look back and have absolutely no regrets, to be able to say, you know what, I lived every day to my fullest. I had a positive impact on people. I don't regret, you know, I don't regret not spending time with people, because I didn't spend time with the people I didn't want to. And I did spend the time and invest the time with the people that I did. I'm fulfilled. I left a good legacy. I mean, that's, to me, that's the ultimate test, is when you, when somebody's writing your eulogy, you know, not only what are they going to say about you, but what are you going to, how are you going to feel, you know, looking back on things and how you lived your life. And for me, especially because of, and you know, the way I lived my life as a teenager and in my very early 20s, it's really important to me to live out the rest of my life in a way that I'm really proud of.
Yeah, you went deep. I love it. Have you ever done the exercise where you actually write your eulogy now, and then you go back and look and go, okay, how am I not living congruent with that? That's a humbling experience.
I have, and it is. And maybe that's why that came to mind, because it had a lot of, it had a big impact on me, for sure.
Look, I got to say, I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you here. And, you know, I hope that people hear you and they see a guy who loves life, a guy who knows that he was put on earth for a purpose, and that you're going for it and you're taking risk and you're being authentic in that journey. And you've admitted stuff that you would do differently. You are living unincarcerated right now. And you're a role model for not only those guys in prison, you're a role model for those outside. And by the way, that does not mean that you need to be perfect, because you never will be perfect. And and you just need people around you when you make a mistake, just like I do, that said, get up, keep going. Yeah, you made a mistake, keep going. Thank you so much for the time. Thank you for your candor. We'll be cheering for you in all your endeavors. Personally, I hope you and I are working together in some form or fashion as we move forward. So thank you. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Comma Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new investors find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. By the way, you know, I have a lot of investors, which we're not supposed to get into investing here, who someday would probably love to invest in what you are doing on both sides of the, on both sides of your businesses. Yeah, plant-based foods is a big one for a number of reasons. And then, of course, unincarcerated productions would be a huge one. So someday, maybe some of these listeners can invest in you.
I would love to be a good steward of their resources and get a good return for all of us. And I really appreciate the time and you having me on, Jeff, and definitely look forward to us working together as we move forward, man.
And by the way, for either I'm a guy who's jealous who doesn't have a very, very defined beard, but when you talk about being meticulous, I'm looking at your beard and I'm like, this guy, man, you've got a great beard and it is perfect. Is that a sign of you being meticulous?
I told you I was particular. Thanks, man.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.